tweet at TodaySOR.
Time for our annual conversation about sports books. With me in studio, our regular sports pundit Damien Lawler. Also here, another Damien O'Mara, who you'll be well used to seeing and hearing on RTE Sports Output. And also with us, Sinead O'Carroll, editor of the journal.ie. I suppose before we talk about individual books, if we were talking wine, we'd be asking, was it a vintage year? Damien O'Mara?
Not compared to the ones that have gone before. I think there's one or two books that are standouts and would probably be standouts most years. I think aside from that, you've got a flood of rugby books in Rugby World Cup year, the vast amount of which I wouldn't recommend too much. There's very few decent concept books, so I would rate it 6 out of 10, maybe.
Sinead? But the good ones are really, really good. That's what I'd caveat that with. There is a couple of standouts. Like, my book of the year is one of the sports books of the year. It's the
but
best.
But not
thing
a vintage
I've...
year. That's
no, the... I think so. It's a more typical year, isn't it? There's a couple of very typical sports books that are kind of, you'd take them out if you're a big fan, but if you're not, you'd probably leave them on the shelf and just look at them.
I'd say since 2000, the standard of Irish sports book has absolutely been excellent. It's gone through the roof in general. You know, authors are actually raising the stakes for other authors, and they're being met continually. And this year, maybe apart from two books like you say, Sinead, average, very average year.
It's because you don't get away with it anymore, so people need to raise the game.
Let's get specific. Damien O'Mara, I see you've chosen Richard Sadler's book, Recovering, which is actually, I think, on everybody's list here. Tell us a bit about it and what makes it a good book.
Yeah, I don't want this to be seen as the fella from RTE recommending the book by the other fella who works on RTE, but this is probably the bravest book I've read since maybe Paul McGrath's book he did with Vinnie Hogan.
Happy birthday,
years ago,
Paul.
On Paul's 60th birthday. Kids should have no homework today. It's Paul McGrath's 60th birthday. It's remarkably brave in vast passages, because he opens himself up an awful lot to the criticism and scrutiny that professional footballers get, and maybe the darker side of what life is like as an elite footballer. And, you know, Richie's done a lot of work in recent years on mental health and issues around consent. And I think he paints a very honest picture of what life is like as the modern professional footballer in his days at Millwall. But then there's passages of it where he speaks about his own difficulties with substance abuse, with alcohol. He charts well into the book an incident with a physio, which obviously an incident of abuse. And I think he puts himself out there an awful lot more than he needed to. And I think he opens himself up to a lot of aspects of his life that perhaps other people would have kept behind closed doors.
Yeah, I think his Late Late Show interview showed and talked a lot about the abuse that he suffered when he was a teenager. But the book is a lot more than just that. Like, the honesty, the searing honesty is almost overwhelming at times.
It's difficult in patches.
Damien, I don't know if you felt that as well. And if we didn't know there was a happy ending, it would almost be too dark in some places. But because you get a real sense of Richie as a young boy and trying to get his sense of place in a family where there was alcoholism. Then he turns into a teenager who has buckets of talent but very little self-belief. Like, you can almost feel yourself in Richie's mind. And he did write it himself with a bit of help, but he did do a lot of the writing himself. And I think that paid off in this instance. Probably doesn't in a later book we'll talk about, but it does. I really got a sense of who he was moving through his life.
Yeah, it's absolutely electric. I know Richie Sadler. I wouldn't know him very well, but I know him quite a long time. When he was playing in Nigeria with the Irish under 21 team and Brian Kerr's team, I was over on that trip and I got to know him. And he's worked with him in the Sunday Independent as well. What I love about it, it's very richly written. Every page gives you something. Now, that is some challenge to get in a book that's 300 pages plus. Every single page gives you something. And the big reveal, I suppose, the horrible incident that he had, that didn't come until late on. Mm-hmm. And that takes real guts as a writer not to go with it from the start and hook people in and be done after two or three chapters. There's five or six facets to his life. There's the footballer, the TV pundit, guy, the family man, the psychotherapist, and then the stuff that he dealt with later in the book. And it's just a rollicking read from start to finish. I had it done in maybe in a day and a half. And I didn't speak to Richie through text message, and he was worried about how the reaction would be, and I think the reaction was absolutely overwhelmingly positive.
Just one brief thing, it falls into, say, the category of, say, Philly McMahon from a couple of years ago, where it's like, I think I made the point to you that Philly's book a couple of years ago should have been given to every transition year boy in the country, and I think Richie's book in patches it would be an injustice if it is just seen as a sports book. It's a book that happens to be written by a sports person that has far more to offer.
Back to your own selections, Damien O'Mara and Sinead, you've both gone with Donald McRae's book, In Sunshine or in Shadow. It's about Belfast boxing. Sinead, why did you go for this?
Well, I think I've turned into, I'm not really a boxing fan, but I'm a boxing book fan. Last year, my pick was a boxing book, and this was the best thing I read all year, sports book or non-sports book. I was just riveted. I don't know anything about boxing in the 70s or 80s, and there was one fight between Davy L'Amour and Hugh Russell, and the writing is so gripping in it. And at this stage, you've got a lot of context about the Troubles, a Protestant fighter and a Catholic fighter, they're friends, you know exactly what's going on. I actually had to skip to the end of the passage because I was so head up and my heart was racing. I wanted to know who won the fight, that I had to skip to the end and then go back and read it. It is just, I felt every emotion that you're meant to feel while reading a sports book through it.
It's a brilliant social history through the prism of boxing. Starts on Bloody Sunday, finishes with Barry McGuigan winning his world title fight. And it is just like Donald McRae, who has written phenomenal boxing books. He's a brilliant interviewer. Like, his Guardian column is worth reading every week. But he just has this relationship with boxing where he manages to use it to shed a light on the world. It's based pretty much exclusively around Jerry Story and the Holy Family gym, and basically how, despite pressure to sign up with the IRA and, you know, be seen as a Republican figure, he basically united the communities through boxing. Brilliant book.
He's called to a meeting with the heads of the UVF and the other side of the regime, shall we say, and he's reassured that the work he's doing has not gone unnoticed, and that should he go to Shankill or any of those areas, he's going to be under full protection and to continue the great work he's doing. This is at a time when the both sides of the fence couldn't even look at each other, and boxing brought them together and kept them together.
No, he's not he's just not telling the story. He's showing you in that meeting, but also there's a point where Jerry Story is walking into the maze, and I almost felt claustrophobic. It's just insanely brilliant writing.
Two GAA suggestions as well that seem to have proven popular with you folks. Camouflage by Owen Larkin, who was with us in studio, and The Double by Adrian Russell.
I'll take the Camouflage book. I suppose for 6 or 7 years, come the final whistle on All-Ireland final day, within maybe 2 minutes, I would be interviewing Owen Larkin, and I'd always ask him, how many now? And he'd be 6, 7, 8. I never had him down as a guy who'd write a book. He was a quiet warrior. I'd say he's one of Cody's favourite lieutenants. Got about his business, got 2 or 3 pints, dropped back to the half-back line, did his job. I didn't see a whole lot more outside of that story. He turns out
just an ordinary handy Kilkenny hurler.
Got chatting to him. Like, obviously life in the army, he left that, he's moved on, he discovered a sister that he didn't always know he had. He's battled with depression, and I think that's the big thing that breaks down a lot of barriers for a macho Kilkenny hurler to come out with that. And it also shows a sign of Brian Cody as a cuddly little bear, shall we say. Compared to the stuff we'd heard, the ruthless Brian Cody put a protective arm around this guy and looked after him. And the final word I'll say is the structure of the book. In fairness to Pat Nolan, he broke it down into 12 months of the year. He didn't go with the usual bread and butter layout that you get in a book. That often works. Pat tried something different and it really worked.
It does
a classic work. Book.
It kind of feels like a sequel to Jackie Terrell's, actually, in some ways, on the Cody
a companion
front.
Book. And it to Cody not having read the Jackie Terrell book.
To get stuff out of Kilkenny that Jackie hadn't covered was a challenge in itself, Sinead.
Yeah.
Don't take the double.
The double, yeah. So just to caveat this, if you did Richie, I do work with Adrian. He's the editor of the 42, Adrian Russell.
This double is about...
The Cork double, which we actually... I'm not a Cork woman, but we don't talk enough about the Cork Double of 1990. It's an amazing
Cork people
thing
do.
To have achieved.
And we'll
do
win
you know
the
what?
Football
I'm not
too.
Sure if they even do. I come from, there's a lot of Meath people in my family. My mum is Meath connected. And I actually didn't know a lot about this 1990 rivalry. Obviously, I'm too young to remember it. But it's a fascinating account. It's more of a traditional, it's a sports book in the traditional fold. But it's really nicely put together. There's great characters in it. Kid Cronin, Dr. Michael O'Brien, Babs Keating's donkeys, that famous phrase. But it also sets itself in the time and gives you lots of context. Like you're hearing about things happening and then Prince is coming to Ireland and there's furore and controversy because people don't want Prince. I don't know what he was going to do to the minds of young people in 1990 Ireland. The Eurovision is there, Italian 90 there is. Adrian's done a really nice job of putting you in place, and then it's again like Donald McRae, it's a feat of interviewing.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, with the passage of time, you would imagine how many times these guys have told the stories of 1990, but there is not one iota of staleness in it. It's
That's
so fresh and very, very vibrant. And the Cork people in our office have raved about it. So,
and there's a lot of emotion in the end where you see the Meath
and Kerry
team.
I'd be better off raving about Cork. Something more up to date. At least I'd like to have something more up to date to rave about. But anyway, Damien, another book that you liked, and we again had a nice chat with him here, Kevin McStay's autobiography.
Yeah, there's a few sleepers out there, like Sean McGoldrick's book in Dublin City Marathon is one, Kieran McCarthy in Something in the Water. But Kevin McStay, he did this book with Liam Hayes, and his voice really came out. And he brought you as close to being inside the dressing room as any kind of recently activated manager at intercounty level has done in the last few years. He admitted the shortcomings of the Roscommon team. He admitted his own shortcomings, his own fears. He brought you right in. His voice comes out straight away, Sean. It's obviously a ghostwritten job, but all you can hear is Kevin McStay throughout the book. And that's a triumph now for anybody to be able to present that to a reader. It's a lively book, and I would definitely recommend it as a Christmas present also.
Yeah, I mean, for GA people or for everybody who's interested
sports person,
in sports.
Yeah, in terms of coaching,
this
management.
This non-vintage era is turning out to be not such a bad one after all.
Yeah, you'll always get five or six though. I mean, when we say non-vintage, I suppose maybe there's not the quantity of excellent books out there that have been in. It's been quite enough year, I suppose, is the word.
And then I think there's just some ones that we were disappointed in, I think, probably.
We've
the last
come to those
years.
Now, just before we do, you mentioned there, and look, I think we're getting such a reaction to this item, and also we need to get an update on Lisa Smith in court. Finian Collins has very kindly agreed to stay, and we'll talk to Finian after the programme, and we'll bring you that interview tomorrow all about Beethoven. But the O'Donovan brothers, I think, have been the inspiration for another book that's out there. It's called Something in the Water.
And it's brilliantly written by Kieran McCarthy. And I think maybe it examines the success story of Skibbereen, how a miracle really in Irish rowing has happened. The O'Donovans, maybe you could do with them being central characters in this story. That's not always going to be possible. But I think Kieran McCarthy's done an excellent job. It's a really enjoyable book. Fantastically written, I have to say. He's done a fantastic job in writing that.
And never judge a book by its cover, but it's absolutely beautiful as well, so it actually would make a gorgeous present. It's probably the nicest looking book of the year.
My fear about it was that it might be a little bit too specialist, but by all accounts anyone could dip into it and enjoy it.
Now, it was mentioned at the start, I think, by yourself, Damien O'Mara, there have been a few big rugby books this year, and you all bring them up on your list. I noticed last night somebody in Penguin Ireland being very pleased on the Twitter machine that Joe Schmidt's book, Ordinary Joe, had sold something like 7,000 copies last week. Not bad now if you're a bookseller or if you're a publisher or a writer indeed.
Yeah, they might need it.
You guys all want to give him back his homework.
Well, yeah, okay. I think this book isn't aimed at me. And if I was to collate the minutes spent with sports people over the last 5 years, Joe Schmidt would be at the upper echelons. And I've heard a lot of the stories that are in it in different scenarios. I think there's a mirror between the World Cup campaign that if you heard Joe Schmidt was doing a book, you would have had slightly higher expectations. And I think a big challenge that the book faces is that he wrote the entire thing himself. And there's no ghostwriter. And in a scenario like that, and Damien can reflect on this more as a man who has ghostwritten books, you don't have someone in the room to ask you the awkward questions that you might not necessarily want to be asked. I don't think it's quite as down the list as some of the reviews have made it out to be, but I would have expected a better book. I would have expected a slightly more open book. It's part memoir, part sports psychologist. There's a slightly rushed World Cup diary towards the end. Do you get a massive insight into Joe and what makes Joe tick? I don't think you do.
I wish two things for this book. One, that he had gotten someone to write it with him, and two, that it wasn't out right now, that it was maybe this time next year. It just feels too rushed. But I felt bad because at the end of it, it solidifies the thing in your head that Joe Schmidt is a very, very, very lovely man. Mm. And so at the end of the book, I'm like, yep, he is still the lovely man that I went into this book thinking. And then I felt bad about saying that he shouldn't have written it himself. But then I thought, well, actually, if I was sitting in the studio talking about rugby and Joe Schmidt was saying, he wouldn't be long telling me now that I was incorrect or I shouldn't be talking about rugby. So I think, Damien, you could probably, as someone who has written ghost books, say, do you know what, Joe, you did need
Paul Galvin. Paul Galvin
would add
himself a few years ago and did a right good job on it as well. I think with Joe Schmidt,
He's an English teacher, by the way, I think, originally. So, I mean, it's not as though he can't.
No, it's not badly written. It's not that. It's just it needed more punch. It needs more of a challenge.
But it sounds to me like you're saying, really, he needed an editor as opposed to a ghostwriter.
No, there would be an editor there with Penguin, and a really, really good one, by the way, as well. So, an editor can only do so much. As a ghostwriter, you are already thinking about a book outline. What chapters go where? You have to keep the pages ticking over. You have to have a hook every so often, and you have to pack it with anecdotes and insights. And if you're not getting those, you feel shortchanged.
And I think some people probably will find that this is insightful in some ways. As Damien said, there is a lot of leadership stuff there. But to me, it felt like there was too much TED Talk, too much Instagram quote. It fell a bit flat rather than insight into Joe's mind.
Should you leave it for a year then? Has the momentum been lost? He's out of the job a year. Andy Farrell is in. There's a distance now between himself and the players, which maybe could provide more insights and more anecdotes about the team and the squad. But is that puff of wind gone then 12 months down the line?
Well, probably for sales it is, but maybe someone who actually wants an insight. There was one line he was talking about losing a game to the Crusaders, and he was talking about the sheer dread of sitting in the coach's room and trying to engineer a solution knowing that the other team was superior. And I thought, that's the insight about the New Zealand game. It was too early to get that insight. But there's definitely one for fans.
We'll be talking about the new abridged version or something like that. But meanwhile, it's running out the doors of the bookshop. Now, there's another rugby book, the Jamie Heaslip book. And have you read it? What did you make of it? He has a ghostwriter, Matt Cooper.
Hasn't been done much of a service by, like, Paul Kimmage did the book a lot of damage, and understandably so, over the course of a couple of weeks, where he examined a revelation in the book about a drugs test, which seems to have been misrecollected by Jamie. There's an element as well. Jamie's a deep thinker, and Jamie is a guy who embraced technology within sport and embraced the psychological aspect of sport. He kind of gives you the sizzle without giving you the sausage, in terms of he leads you down the road of giving you a bit of insight into how the game has changed and how the modern player gets himself up without fully revealing. I would have liked to have known more about the use of technology. I would have liked to have known more. Give us a little bit more about your prep.
Yeah.
I was left probably asking more questions of it than I was learning answers about. Is it a book of the brand or a book of the man?
That's exactly how I felt. I found it oddly engrossing because I did find it was giving me a lot of Jamie Heaslip, but probably the Jamie Heaslip that I already know exists because it's brand Jamie Heaslip. And in that way, I kind of found it kind of unintentionally being dragged into it. It's almost like watching bad TV. You know, have you ever sat down and start watching one episode of Say Yes to the Dress, and next thing you know, you've watched three of them, and you're like, "What am I doing to my brain?"
I'll take your word for it.
But it kind of felt like that, like watching reality TV for too long.
Quick word about another rugby book, the Eddie Jones autobiography. Now, he was at the World Cup as well in Japan.
I'm going to be popular for this. My rugby book of the year, if you're buying a book for a rugby fan, is the Eddie Jones autobiography, My Life in Rugby, which happens to have been ghostwritten by Donald McRae, who we've mentioned. earlier. Again, very stark. Opens up massively about growing up as the son of a Japanese family in Australia and the difficulties that presented at a very young age. I quite like the passages where he talks about the downs of rugby and the sackings and those lonely nights when you're at home having lost your job and the impact it has on your family. And that personal insight, I never knew. To be honest with you, I couldn't have told you whether he was married, whether he had kids, any of that, until I read this. And he opens up an awful lot. Like, the move back to Japan for the sake of his family rather than the sake of his career, and then opens brilliantly with Japan's win against South Africa in the 2015 Rugby World Cup. Really insightful book.
Is there much by way of selection in terms of soccer books this year? I mean, the Michael Owen offering reboot will prove popular, or will it?
Yeah, actually, he had a Twitter spat with Alan Shearer. You know,
the week before the book came out.
And it absolutely drove the book through the clouds in terms of sales. And I believe the publishers are absolutely delighted with that.
Yes.
Whereas I've seen it happen the other way too, where a spat comes out, and we've seen it even the books we've mentioned in the last few minutes. It hasn't taken off in the manner it should. I'll say one thing about Owen. He's a divisive figure, especially if you're a Man United Liverpool supporter. You might also think that he's a bit cocky or overconfident, a bit maybe misplaced with his arrogance. He's very honest.
I like the fact that I was reluctant to read this when it was sent to me, and then I heard great things about it, and I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the honesty in it, that it's like this fella said this about me. Well, I'll tell you, this is the truth of what happened. Now, there's an element of there's two sides to every story, and the truth exists somewhere in between. But he's very open about his move to Madrid, wanting to move back to Liverpool, how bad things were for him at Newcastle, and basically didn't care about Newcastle. Very open about it.
Our last minute. Any quick hits that you all want to make, or any of you?
Two quick hits for me. Unbreakable by Richard Asquith. It's kind of a left field one about Lata Brandisova, who at the age of 42 won the Velka Pardubica in 1937. It's kind of a real history. And one other one, The Colouring Book from 42 She Can, which is 21 female athletes,
and
which is perfect
other,
kit for
the
kids.
The 42's collection of essays as well and interviews
Behind
is super. Yeah.
Lovely.
Commander in Chief by Rick Riley, an examination of Donald Trump and all his flaws by looking at how he cheats on the golf course. I buy you a copy of it.
Yeah.
You're on a promise.
He claims he won 20 club championships. He won none. Sadly, Aaron Larkin are top for me. McStay, McGoldrick, McCarthy, and Adrian Russell are next.
Right. We have to mention Season of Sundays, the wonderful collection of pictures brought out by
Ray McManus.
Ray McManus. Yeah, it's a fantastic collection. It's all in blue this year. I wonder why. Word or two of Seamus Darby's. I enjoyed his book about that goal.
Apologies. Yeah. A huge insight there from PJ Cunningham. And it delved into Seamus's life after the big goal.
Okay, look, it's been fantastic having you again in studio. Damien O'Mara, Damien Lawler, Sinead O'Carroll. Maybe almost a vintage here after all that. We'll take a quick break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.